Right, this week is Parshas Pinchas, page 876. Parshas Pinchas has a number of topics. The first one actually began in last week's Parsha, at the very end of Parshas Balak, when Pinchas, he's actually the only person identified in last week's Parsha in the story. Zimri and Cusby are identified in this Parsha, and we're actually going to see what the Or Chaim has to say about that. After that, after Pinchas kills them, we're told that the Magifa, well, actually, we're told at the very end of last week's parsha, v'hamagefa. No, I'm sorry. V'hamagefa netzara is in Parshas Korach. It's something else. But that the v'tayatzar magefa me'al b'nei Yisrael, and that the magefa ended, and there are 24,000 casualties of that. And then on the top of page 878, you'll see that that it says v'yihi acharei magefa, and then there's a break in the text. So we'll also see what that is. And then there's a census. Perek Chavav begins with a census, and that carries us through basically the end of Perek Chavav, almost the end of Perek Chavav. Then the Leviim are counted again, and then we're told about the daughters of Tzlafchad. And after the daughters of Tzlafchad have their request for the land, Moshe is told to go up to Har HaAvarim, which is a fascinating discussion, which we're not going to get into, about what Avarim means. Which mountain is this? Is it actually called Har Avarim? The Gemara talks about it also being Har Nebo. And Avarim also comes from the word which means transition. So it's a very important transition in which Moshe says, you need to have a new shepherd, a new leader for the Bnei Israel. So Hashem says, okay, you'll appoint Yoshua. And then after that, we're introduced to the Karbanos of the Zmanim. So first Rosh Chodesh at Chamishi, and then the Maftir is basically of every holiday that we have, concluding with the Parei HaChag of Sukkot, in which each day was a different number of bulls, while I think everything else remained the same. And but the numbers went down for that. Each, I think the first day was 13, and then it goes down to 7. And that rounds out the Parsha. So what we're going to look at this afternoon, is we're going to look at a little bit of each of those narrative sections, and then one comment of the Or Chaim on Rosh Chodesh, on the Karbanos of Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so that's the plan. All right, so we begin with pasuk Yud Aleph at the beginning of the parsha. So we're introduced to Pinchas, and what he did was he turned back God's wrath in doing what he did, and God says, "Velo chilis yes b'nei Yisrael b'kenasi," and I did not destroy the b'nei Yisrael in my jealousness. So the interesting thing is that it tells us Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron hakohen. Right? We're given Pinchas's genealogy. Now that wouldn't be so crazy, except that we were told that at the very end of last week's parsha, "Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron hakohen." So it's really only, one, two, three psukim later, in which this story is essentially being repeated. So why is Pinchas' genealogy in that way, giving us his father and his grandfather, repeated? And that's the first question that the Or Chaim asks, at least that in the information that I gave you. Pinchas ben Elazar, Tzarech l'daz lama hu tzarech liachso? Why was it necessary to tell us about his yichus? V'laishin eskabi v'shizkru v'sogu tova. Maybe so that his fathers will be remembered for good. So this is amazing. Saying that what Pinchas is essentially doing here is he's doing a tikkun, he's doing a correction to that which Aaron is, I don't want to say credited for, but discredited for, in with regard to the egel. That's the parsha. That's the pasuk in Kisisa, when Hashem says that there was a negef, right? Vayigof, negef, a plague against the nation because they did the egel that Aaron did. All right. So what happened? Hari Amad Pinchas ben Beno. So Pinchas, his grandson, Pada nefesh kol Yisrael. What did Pinchas do? He stopped the magif. Now it's interesting. That's not what Pada means, redeemed, the nefesh of all of Israel. But lo chilisias ben Israel. He says, I could have destroyed all of ben Israel, but on account of Pinchas, I stopped. Now, we also saw Aaron do something of that nature. But in the end of the day, what's written down in the Torah? Al asher asu asa egel asher asa Aaron. So yes, Aaron was heroic in Parshas Korach with the Ketores. Vatei atzara, right, that line that we said before, that was Aaron, no question about it. But Aaron still has a stain against him nevertheless. So what Pinchas did is also given credit to Aaron. Okay, that's what that stands for. Shahaya Aaron omeid misakein vayimalami kli shel Torah maasim tovim. What did Aaron do? Aaron did whatever he could to fix his error, his blunder in that case. But nevertheless, Aaron was still given again the negative credit for a large population dying. And he wanted to fix that, but how do you fix that? You know, you cause the deaths of people. Mikan Ramaz Hashem ki Pinchas Shalem b'mida tova meruba. That Pinchas is even more complete in what he achieved here. Okay, and you know, that's one of the interpretations, by the way, of what the gift that Pinchas is given. What is a brisi shalom? So some typically translate shalom to mean peace, but what's the covenant of peace? So I don't remember if it was last year in the Aksava Kabbalah, I think it was there, but it could have been somewhere else where I saw it, that the covenant of shalom means the covenant of shalemus, that what Pinchas achieved here was to become that which he was destined to become. If you remember what happens after this, Pinchas had been grandfathered out, right, of being a Kohen, because he was already born. And it was only Aaron, his sons, and whichever children were to be born after that. Pinchas was already born, so Pinchas was not a Kohen. So Pinchas, on account of this, became a Kohen. And we know that after Elazar dies, who takes over? Pinchas. Pinchas becomes the next Kohen Gadol at the end of the book of Yehoshua. So that's another interpretation of what Brisi Shalom. So when he says here, Kan Ramas Hashem ki Pinchas Shalem b'mida tovim ruba, that Pinchas is complete with this wonderful characteristic and character traits which he has. So I think that is reflective of what Pinchas was. Okay. Now, I brought the next one because it's a little more out there, but I think it's important because of the essential connections. So what we're told is that so Pinchas gets this the bris of the kahuna, the covenant of kahun forever, on account of the way that he was basically, you know, protecting the honor of God. So the Orach Chaim there says, maybe you're familiar with the idea that Pinchas is Eliyahu. Now, I don't think that we can say that it's the same guy. Pinchas is definitely not Eliyahu, but that he may be a Gilgal, right? Same neshama, whatever it may be, or that Pinchas is just a precursor to what Eliyahu is. Ashuhua sidavaser amin Yisrael begalus acharon. Right? He's the one who's supposed to inform them of the final, of the, you know, when the final galus ends. B'kanodia kasu mazach lemalazo. So the Torah is telling us here, through what did Pinchas merit to be identified as Eliyahu? Leheshiv lev banim alavos, right? You probably know that from camp. Okay? Leheshiv lev alavos. Okay, v'amruzal, so the rabbi said in Idios, ein Eliyahu ela laharbo shalom ba'alam, that the whole job of Eliyahu is to spread peace in the world. V'amro, Pinchas, right? Heshiv es chamasim b'kanos, v'kanos, right? Kafal lamar beis kanos. What?
Is it part of the bris milah ceremony?
Yes, it is. Yeah. But the point is, look at what it says here. Bikano es kinasi. Okay? So you have this word kina. Tachas asher kinei lelohav. Right? How would you translate kina? I mean, sometimes it's translated as vengeance, sometimes it's jealousy. Okay? Zealousness. Right. So it depends on the context of how it appears. But what is it? Kafalomar beis kinos lirmos lakina shekine bisman ze ulakina shekine pam beis bimei achav. So there are two kinos here. Okay, one is the one that Pinchas demonstrated, and the one is in the time of Eliyahu, where the pasuk says kano kinei si Hashem. If you remember the story of Eliyahu, or if you don't remember, I'll quickly summarize it. Eliyahu has a price on his head because he made a decree, he made a declaration that until, right, something happens, there isn't going to be rain until I say so. So Achav says, drought! What's wrong with you? Achav is not such a good guy. He's a pretty terrible king. So he puts a price on Eliyahu's head. And Eliyahu runs out to Har Choriv, which is identified as Sinai. And he has this mystical encounter with God, where he says, Kano kinei si Hashem, that I become, you know, jealous, or zealous, rather, for God. Gam sham kafal amar kano kinesi. The most base kanos. Achaz b'mei Moshe v'achaz v'achaz b'mei Yachav. Right. So what he's demonstrating is that whoever I am, right, I'm Eliyahu now, but in a previous Gilgul, I did a different kano kinesi, right, a double kina. One is in the time of Moshe as Pinchas. Now in the time of Achav as Eliyahu. L'chein amar. So what is the covenant? The covenant that's given to Pinchas is the covenant which was forged with the forefathers to give them asar amin. I don't know what the ten amin are. When we identify the nations, seven. Right? We talk about seven. You know, but who's Pinchas fighting against? You know, Moab, Midian, right?
Right.
So maybe those are other nations. I mean, Moab wasn't really supposed to go into the hands of, but maybe, I mean, and Sichon and Og are not considered different Ammin because they're both Amori. So I'm not sure what the Asar Ammin are. But anyway, Zay Yikra Bris Shalom Ki Az Yeh Shalom B'Chol Olam. So why is it called a covenant of peace? Because when Pinchas prevails, again in the format of, I guess Eliyahu, then there's supposed to be peace in the world. That's a cow and a bear. It's Yeshayahu. So what's he talking? You know, that's the famous line about the wolf and the lamb. Lo yareyu v'lo yashchisu. Okay, that they lay together. Bris ze yelo ki huze asher yaseh zedavar ze meishiv le banim alavos. Right, he'll return back the hearts of the sons and the fathers, etc. V'chsiv. Hine enochi shalech lachem es Eliyahu Navi. That's the other, you probably learned that one also in camp. Ad lifnei ba yom Hashem, that Eliyahu is the one who's supposed to bring the final redemption. Zedik dik lamar, nino sein lo. It's similar to hine enochi shalech lachem, hine nino sein lo. Bepartus veloshi tefi mozaro. Now what's he doing? He's saying that this is a specific thing that I'm giving to Pinchas. Hine nino sein lo, as brisi shalom. Not hine nino sein lo levanav acharav, but it's specifically to this man, Pinchas, who in the future is going to be Eliyahu as well. So Hinanino saying lo is brisi shalom, he's going to have the covenant of peace because he's the one who's going to bring peace in when he's Eliyahu, but with regard to him and his children, they get the kahuna. So kahuna is transfer generation to generation. But the idea of being Melech HaMashiach one day, or whatever it is that whatever role Eliyahu is going to play, that is something which is given specifically to one man. So Tachas means underneath, which references two destinations or destinies that he's going to have because of two things which he did. Bris Shalom, the covenant of Shalom, is Tachas Asher Kineh Lelohav. Kan Remus Mashakineh B'mei Achav. So, Tachas Asher Kineh Lelohav, right? He was zealous for his God. So he did that here. What did he do for his God? I mean, he only killed Zimri. Not such a big deal in the scheme of things. I mean, maybe he's anti-idolatry, but that's not what Pinchas was doing. Pinchas was anti what Zimri and Cusby were doing, which is less idolatrous and more Gilui Arayos. Okay? And that's an interesting discussion, by the way, about what Baal Por is. I talked about this a little bit on Shabbos in the class before davening, about what was the big sin here in Baal Por. Baal Por is idolatry, and it's a disgusting form of idolatry, but it has nothing to do with sexuality. Okay, it has to do with other things related to the body, which we're not going to go into now. But the act of Zimri and Cusby was a different form of defiance than Baal Por, and that's just. Something important to put out there. So, but the idea that he's zealous for God, because what happened in the time of Achav was Avodah Zarah, right? It was significant Avodah Zarah. Lumash adikdek lamar lelohav sheniskanei al Avodah Zarah shelenemar kiel kana, right? Hashem is a jealous God. Ad shamru kolam, Hashem hu elokim, right? The Eliyahu story, in which Eliyahu has to run away, is surrounding the story of Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel. Remember that with Eliyahu, that's the Haftorah of Parshas Ki Sisa, which is when Eliyahu has the confrontation with the prophets of Baal and with the two Mizbeach, and in each one, and Eliyahu put water on his wood, And the Nevi'i Baal tried to get their god to light up the fire. Of course, nothing happened. And then the fire comes down, and everybody says, Hashem is God, which is the inspiration for what we say at the end of Yom Kippur. And that's the idea. That on that day, Hashem will be one, His name will be one, and that's the way everybody will understand it. Okay, Shugam Kain, so Hashem Hu Elokim. That's the same idea of Hashem Hu Elokim. So in other words, what we have is Pinchas essentially laying the groundwork of what Eliyahu is going to do in the future. Yom Rov, Vayichaper, and he brought atonement, who can negate use Vahisalo, Rizkunas, Kizehu, Lo, Chelok, Kapar al Bnei Israel. He brought Kapar for the, he brought atonement from Israel. Right, as a Kohen, he too will do that, will bring atonement. And so, essentially, what we're seeing here is through the language of the Pasuk, through the usage of certain words, Kina, Vayichaper al Bnei Israel, Hinanu Nasin Lo Esbrisi Shalom. So we get this hint of the role which this person, now as Pinchas and later Eliyahu, will play for the destiny of Bnei Israel. Okay, so now the Or HaChaim asks the question, which I kind of hinted to at the outset, and that is the Pasuk Yudalam. B'shem Ish Yisrael Mukash Yerukazim Indir Nizim Riben Salim Nesu Esav Lishmoni. So first, now we're identifying this fellow who Pinchas killed, Zimri ben Salu. Okay, now if we have any evidence from the Torah, there are a number of times when the spies was an interesting, it's really an anomaly in a sense, because the spies, they started off good, and so there was a whole pomp and ceremony about who these guys are. They're going to go in, they're going to report to Moshe, so we know their identification. And also, Dasan and Aviram was a big public affair, and we're actually going to see a little bit about. Actually, I may have taken that out. Yeah, I didn't give you the stuff about Dasan and Aviram, but I gave the stuff about Bnei Korach and Mesu. Anyway, so the question which she asks is, Kashem, Imanov Shachim, Chavetz Hashem, Lagalos, Amukim, Ayla, Laz, Kiram, Shas, Maisa. Right, if God wanted to let us know who the people who did this terrible sin were, He should have told us when it happened, right? We don't know anybody in the Chet HaEgel, for example. We don't know who the Mekoshe Sheitzim is, right? Kisham, Vinei Yishim, Bnei Israel, Zimri, right? Tell us who it is. Who's the guy who's defiant with Cosby? Right? If Hamidinis, if this lady is so terrible, tell us who she is. If you're going to tell us anyway, right? The guy who gathers the wood, we don't know who he is. Okay, there's a big debate about that, as to whether it was Tzlafchad. I am of the view, based on a number of commentaries, that it wasn't Tzlafchad. And actually that whatever Tzlafchad did is not even identified in the Torah. Okay, we're going to see a little bit about Tzlafchad. But that's one view, but it's probably not correct. Okay, if we have time, I'll go into it separate, but we're probably not going to have time. So lamanich limlach lazkir shemam. So why is the Torah choosing here in Parshas Pinchas when it didn't in Parshas Balak tell us their names? Why is it telling us their names? Gam kein lohosif od tevo seseros b'torah shemay maskir shemal namal lo yitzarech lomar pam beis v'shem ish v'shem o'isha. There are extra words here. We know what Pinchas did. We saw it in the last week's Parsha. So just say, here's a guy, Zimri, and here's a lady, Cosby, and now in this week's Parsha, all you have to do is say, Bikanos kanasi. You don't have to tell us what he did. We know what he did. It's 4 psukim ago.
Do we know who Tzur was?
Ah, we're going to get to that. That's okay. That's fantastic. Achein, hinei Adam baruch hu einu chafetz l'zalzel fil bereshan l'farsem mi bali dvar mamuz d'metuavim. God doesn't want to tell us who these people who are doing this disgusting things is. Mekoshesh yochiach, and the Mekoshesh is a perfect example. Gam ma'ashe l'faneinu tireh she lo gilo sam b'shas ma'isa. Right? God also here did not want to reveal it. Elo, davka achar shehizkir shevach Pinchas. The only reason why they're being mentioned is to demonstrate what Pinchas' praise was. Asher po alva asa me'amifal atov shekinei la'ashem v'chipirah b'nei Yisrael zachar gam kein ki lo kinei ba'adam pachas el ba'adam gadol nisibei sa'avim ha'isha rosh ha'klipos v'yavi ha'melech. Okay? He has to show us what Pinchas did. Because if it was just some Joe Schmo who was doing this, Shkoyach Pinchas, he killed some Joe Schmo. No, this, he was a Nasi, he was a prince of a tribe. Mm-hmm. This is a big dude. Right? What Pinchas did was a tremendous act of, I don't want to call it defiance, but a tremendous act of standing for God. Because, you know, you might think he's a top notch politician, right? You know, member of the uppermost cabinet,
of the elite.
Right? Of the elite, an untouchable, right? Above the law. No, not at all. And who's this lady? Via Melech, her father's a king. Kamro Rosh Umos base of Midian. Venus Ava Bemisa Bezuya Lankol, and she, through this terrible, you know, was essentially, I mean, shamed forever in this terrible debt that she had in front of everybody. V'chol kiyotz b'zeh shemoyiz barach miskadesh. And through that, Pinchas is further blessed and honored. Zeh yechzeh lamar bas melchi. And that's why we get this idea that she was the daughter of a king. V'gam sheyesh zilzul l'ish Yisrael lo yigara. Right, that what happens as a result is that the names of the wicked are basically, you know, denigrated, and that's how he becomes a zecher tzaddik livracha, right? A tzaddik whose memory becomes a blessing. I'm assuming that that's the Satan in some way. Samach Mem is probably referring to Samael. Okay, so in other words, that the way God's wrath was subsided was on account of this great act that Pinchas did. But we only appreciate the degree of what Pinchas did when the identification of Zimri and Kazvi becomes available to us. Right, if he just went to some Joe Schmo who's doing some schnook, who's, you know, who cares what this some nobody does? But because it was who it was, so right. Okay, so that's why Pinchas achieved what he achieved and was so honored, because he didn't care who the individual was. He looked at the act and said, it doesn't matter who the person is. Okay? And that's why it tells us very specifically the name of the man is the lowest big b'mamar v'shem amuka. And it says v'shem ha'ish, and the name of the man. It doesn't say just the name of the guy struck down. V'shem ha'ish. Okay, so lefi darkenu yirtzel lashon chashivus lamar ki chashem ulu b'Yisrael ve'al kol zeh lo nir tatzadik zeh miyasos bo ma'aseh nifla. He didn't care the fact that this guy was such an important person. He went ahead and did what he had to do. Onir kitam shalos ki Hashem shmo l'malo lefi shadayin lo asa ma'aseh. So he says the reason why his name is not mentioned at the outset is because when it's told to us, Pasuk Ches, if you go back, okay, Pasuk Vav, that's the way it should be. So when he's first introduced to us, he's an ish because he hasn't done anything yet. His identification doesn't matter. And then Pinchas goes along and says and does what he does. Once we see what that Pinchas was able to stop the plague through what he did, then the identification of this person becomes important. So a few psukim later, when God gives Pinchas the reward that he gives him, then we need to know who in fact the individual was. Because it is a mitzvah to publicize the wicked. And so, by the way, that may give an indication about why the Mekoshei Sheitzim is not identified, because some look at the Mekoshei Sheitzim in a positive way, saying that he was trying to teach a lesson. Right? Part of the issue with identifying Tzlafchad as the Mekoshei Sheitzim is because the Torah doesn't do it. As a matter of fact, I think it's Rabbi Akiva who identifies him as... I'm not sure. The two people involved in the conversation are Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. So one of them says that Tzlafchad was Mekoshei Sheitzim, and then the other one says, the Torah hid it, now you're saying who Tzlafchad was? How can you do that? Rather, Tzlafchad was one of the Ma'apilim. So I look at that and say, hold on a second. If you're going to say that you can't identify what Safcha did, then how do you go ahead and say what Safcha did? So, you know, anyway, that's just another thing to bear in mind. Okay, but now you asked the question about Cusby. Okay? So Tzur is a king. How do we know Tzur is a king? Because we're told in next week's Parsha. Did we look at this last week? I don't remember. But if you go look on page 904, Pasuk Ches, it says, V'es malchei Midyan hargu al chalehem, the kings of Midyan, they were killed, as Evi, V'es Rekem, V'es Tzur, V'es Chur, V'es Reva, Chamesh malchei Midyan, V'es Bilam v'mar hargu b'charif. So it tells us about the most important people who were killed in the battle of Midyan. Bilam, you'll note that Bilam is mentioned, and it mentions Tzur. Who is Tzur? So some are of the view that Tzur is actually Balak. Okay, and why he's called this? You know, Balak ben Sipor, I think we talked last week about how Balak was called Ben Sipor because he used a bird to get the bird man of Alcatraz, yeah, in order to get the information which he got because he was a magician as well, but that Sipor, it wasn't really his father's name, but that's just who he was, and you know, it doesn't take that much of a stretch to see how Sipor and Tzur are related words. It's basically the same letters except for the pay, and in any case, but you see that Tzur is the name of a king of Midian. So let's take a look. Midian is. So Cusby is identified as Meshem Ish Yisrael Mukah Ashiruka as Midian is. The man who he struck, and he also struck Ha Midian is. What's He? The. Who's the Midian is? Okay, so it's fascinating. Which women were associated with whatever was going on here? Okay, go back a page. Go back to 874. Vayeshev pasuk, the first pasuk of the parak. Vayeshev Yisrael bashitim ayachel la'am l'znos el
benos.
Which nation?
Moav.
Benos Moav. So who's this lady? Abbas Midian. Who is she? What's she doing here? It's the daughters of Moav who are involved here. Okay, and that's another one of the indicators of why Chazal say that she is the daughter of the king of Midian. Okay, she's Ha Midianist, the Midianite lady. So okay, and who is Balak? Balak ben Sipor, Melech leMoav. We said last week, we identified Balak as being a Midianite. Being a Midianite, he was hired by Moav. And when he failed with Bilam, they fired him. Right? We don't need you as a king. The whole point was to help us, but you didn't help us. So you're fired. So Amar Bahe Adia, Arachim says, Nir Lamar, Kiloisa Isha Acheres Midianiz B'mufkar Zulasa, that there was no other Midianite lady who was, right, Mufkaris, right, basically made Hafker, other than this lady. Lizagam came parshas Balak. She's kira kriva lachavamaris hamidinis. Right at the end of last week's parsha, it says hamidinis behei haidia. Right to tell us it's a specific one. Lamar osa midinis shaisa b'mufkaros. It was only one Midianite lady who was let loose like this. So chavizam lofkiru Midian benosam. That shows us that Midian did not give up on their daughters in this way. The Moabites sacrificed their daughters in a terrible way, saying, oh yeah, all these virgin Moabites, go entice the Israelite men. Terrible. This is the way you treat your own daughters. And if the daughters of Midian were in fact that way, then Hashem would have instructed to kill them. But the fact of the matter is that God said, when it comes to the war with Midian in next week's parsha, we don't see that. God doesn't say to kill the Midianite women, only the Midianite women who had been with men. But if all the girls had been with men, then it would say just kill everybody. We see that the women who were set upon the Bnei Israel were Moabites. So he references something which he said in Perek of Dalad, Pasuk Yudalad, which I didn't have a chance to look at. But he gives a reason why Midian did not agree to let their daughters loose in this way. As Midian katan, he says, so how do we know that she was the daughter of Balak? He says, the Midrash says that Tzur, I told you this before, who was killed with the kings of Midian, and he says, but the Pasuk says, was Balak. And because he gave his daughter in this fashion, he was lowered down. The princess? This is really? That's what you're doing? Shaya Rosh Lekulam. Dechsib Rosh Umos. Right? Rosh Umos. Right, that's the way Balak was described. He was the leader of all the nations there. He becomes one of the kings of Midian. So where do you get this idea? Tzur is Balak. He says, I'm going to prove it to you. I have a very good reason. Kana ben Shoel. It's like Manishtana. Right, there's only one Midianite lady. Okay, so you have to say Manishtanes Midian Azu. She has some Kalbinos Midian. With what is this night different from all of them? Right, this Midianite lady, she's different from all the daughters of Midian. Elavadai ki hu zebalok asher sachar leinu bilam v'yatzav v'kiyeh matzaso bebito. Right, he put his money where his mouth was. He says we're going to give the daughters of Moab. The daughters of Moab, you give your own daughter. No problem. I'll give my own daughter. Right? He destroyed his own honor. The Kayem Eitzarah shall Bilam in order to follow through with Bilam's terrible advice. Terrible advice for Bnei Israel, but his awful advice. But also for the daughters of Moab. Balak. Right? I mean, it's just so endemic of that time period, right? Remember Shechem?
Yeah.
You have to circumcise. We're not circumcising. So the boy Shechem says, I'll do it. He goes first, right? That's what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says, because he wanted the daughter of Yaakov. He didn't delay. So once Shechem comes back and he's already circumcised, it's a hard sell for the people to say, you do it. I already did it. Okay, same thing. The people say, we're not giving up our daughters. I give up my daughter. Okay, well, then there you go.
Put your money where you're right.
Hachkad and Balak. Shaya az melech aliyam. If kirbita. Or you give it. So. Megam shekzatim lal. Shalom malchusu achar shodiyem Bilam. Shalom yariyu vila shechisu l'mahob. Right? And he did not stay as king after Bilam said that the people would not give way. Take it from yad kiyem ha'itza. Balak lo liro v'zayf kiro mahob and osayhem. So Balak just followed through with Bilam's suggestion, gave up his daughter, and so the benos Moab said, the people of Moab said, all right, we can give up our daughters too. Without that, how could you see that Tzur would be different from everybody else? It must be that Tzur was exactly like you said, putting his money where his mouth was, and therefore, who was he? He had to have been Balak, because otherwise, what's Midian's skin in the game? Midian doesn't have any skin in the game. Midian only has skin in the game because Balak was a Midianite, and he was hired by Moab from Midian to do this, as we saw last week. Ella shebali de midrash mizel shanam hein heinim lamed shayi makim nosam v'yomer mizel zeh zohi shechata ima plani hatan pi midrashel lo achas v'lo shtaim ayu v'epshel mar shemidya no lo kiyum b'nasa gdolim el me'amonehem v'zeh ridu balak shevkir bito b'hu haya melech. Okay, so he says that Midian was not willing to give up their daughters. I mean, maybe they were willing to give up some, but Balak was lowered from his status because he gave up his daughter, so he was no longer king. Okay, so he says, why is she called the Midianite lady? Because she was the most honored and respected of all of them. There was no daughter of a king from Midian who went out except for her. Shari Hayu Sham Midianios Harbe. That the Bnei Yisrael did not recognize them because there were a lot of Midianites. V'lo Marakasu Ella Vayachal Elmas Nos Elbanos Moav. So, but the pasuk says that they only went to the daughters of Moav. V'lo Malo is Kir Gamanos Midian. Halamaritya Shahayu Kulan Benihem Benos Moav. Shezulase Hayu Hargo Sam Mitchila Vitlum Monam Olbasov Acham Isa Pinchas Hayulam Larog Benos Midian El Shahayu Kulanashim Bechizkas Benos Moav. He says, there may have been Benos Midian, but insofar as the way everybody saw them, they all seemed to come across as Midianites, as Moabites rather, with the exception of this one. She was the only one who was known to be a Midianite. Because in the end, if you're talking about the Pechusos, right, that nobody is significant, it sounds like, you know, Midian may have sent them out the same way that the Moabites sent them out. Okay, so, you know, I don't know if that satisfactorily answers your question, But you know, I mean, he's giving you the references. If you want to look up where they are, Bamidbar Rabbah, etc.
But it's speculation.
In a chinami, it's speculation, of course. But his point is, but why is it? But how does Perush work? It says, look, there's a hay,
Hamidyanit.
Okay, hay, you know, indicates a very specific one.
Right.
That people could identify. It's like Haba'er, Hamateh.
She was the first daughter.
Right, right. First daughter of Midian, exactly.
Ivanka.
Okay, Halva. Okay, we're not talking about that. Khalila. She's a Yehudiya these days. Okay. By Hi Acharea Magefa. Okay? So remember, we pointed out, top of page 878, you have this phrase. So I found this to be interesting. Okay? So when the Baal Kriya reads this, you see that it's in the middle of a pasuk. There's a big pause. Not just does it have an es nachta, but there's a big space, right? The next line, which is in the middle of a pasuk, the middle of the pasuk continues on the next line. It's like whoever's writing the Torah hits the return key or the enter key, whatever. However, depending how old you are, it determines whether what you call it. Okay, enter or return, and goes to the next line. So Tzarech L'das, Lama As Tchila Parsha B'Yamtzah Kasev. Why is the beginning of a parsha in the middle of a pasuk? Right, you know, these are called parshas in the Torah, not the way we call parshas Pinchas, but a parsha is divided by those spaces in the text. He says, based on what I told you earlier, I didn't give it to you, but remember, they're told tzoror es hamidyanim yikisem osam. So that's tzoror es hamidyanim. That's pasuk yud zayin. That's Hashem says to Moshe that you have to harass the Midianites and smite them. Tiknu machshavas avoda zara vitu atzmam l'teva Elohi. So the idea of taking vengeance against Midian, that is to fight the thoughts of idolatry. So indicates that the magefa which came upon Israel through because of the idolatry stops with that correction of Saror Asamidinim. It's showing us that Avahi Acharei Magifa. It's like I would say the best way to imagine this is like a Venn diagram. You know a Venn diagram? So Avahi Acharei Magifa goes on what came before it, but also applies to what comes after it, because that's in the middle of the Venn diagram. Metam Shelo Asa Pasuk Gufnei Atzmo, and the reason why it's not a pasuk on its own is Kavein Gankin Lakasha Lamata Shacharei Magifa Amar Hashem. It's also trying to show us that it's connected to what comes afterwards. That what happens afterwards is, Suhu'es Rosh Kol Das B'nei Yisrael. They're going to do a census. Nimtzei Somer, Ki Ma'amar Ba'yachar Ha'gufa, Mesh L'mal L'agid Inyan Echad, U'lamata L'agid Inyan Acher. So what does that mean? It's showing us something about the first part, about what comes before it, and about what comes after it. So the first one is to show us that all on account of everything that takes place here, both what Pinchas does and the instructions for taking vengeance against Midian, why can that happen? Because we're now in the aftermath of the Magefa. Why are we in the aftermath of the Magefa? Because of what Pinchas did. So that's one Vayi Acharei Magefa. Now that we're Vayi Acharei Magefa, okay, it's also connected. So now we can also do a census and try to move on. Because that story's over, plague is over. We now need to count ourselves. Why? Because what are we doing next? We're moving on. That's over. That story's over. Now we're going to move on to Eretz Yisrael. And how do I know that's the case? Because what happens is, first we have the census. Immediately after the census, what do we have? We have a discussion about inheritance in the land, right? The daughters of Tzlafchad. And then what's the next thing that we see? Is Hara Avarim. And Moshe being told, you need to appoint a new leader. Okay, a successor. So all these things follow, but that's the immediate aftermath of the Magefa. Do we see anything more about the Pinchas story in the rest of this parsha?
No.
Not at all. Not a blip. Okay, the next thing that we're going to see is in Parshas Matos, we're going to see going back to the need to address the fight with Midian, but that's you know, well past Vayechar. In other words, that's part of the trek to the land. There needs to be a job done on Midian on account of what has taken place.
How do the numbers here in this census compare to the census, the last census before that?
Good question. That's your homework.
The only thing that I'll
do is the final tally of the previous one was 603,550. Okay? If you want to see the final tally here, look at the bottom of page 882, where you have 601,730. Okay, so I saw one commentary who said that why is the census being done now? Because it's trying to show us how Moshe more or less gave the same size crowd to Yahushua. Not exactly the same. It's off by what? 603,550. So it's off by 150,000. Or 601,700. Oh, excuse me. Off by almost 200,000. Okay. Almost off by 2,000. Right. 603,000, 601,000. So it's off by a little less than 2,000.
So rounding off there.
Right. Okay, so in other words...
What was the difference in time between the two?
Oh, one was in the beginning of the 40 years, and one is the end of the 40 years.
So...
There is another census...
Midbar were there.
I understand, but...
Well, not of those being counted in this census. Right. Okay? There are those, plenty from the Dor HaMidbar, who do go in, but they're Levium,
right. The
women, and those under age 20 at the time. So they weren't in that original census. And of course, Kalev and Yehoshua. Okay.
In 40 years, that they lost population.
Right, so they should have gotten more. Well, we just saw 24,000 die.
Okay.
Okay? We also just saw 14,700 die in the Korach. Now, you might say, well, those are the same people, right? In other words, those are from the door that's supposed to die anyway. Okay, I mean, that was in Parshas Korach, and Parshas Korach is in the beginning, right? It's in the second year. So those people, maybe they would have had children. There's plenty of things that we can argue, just, you know, in semantics in terms of trying to play with numbers. Okay, so we'll leave that for what it is. I mean, we can ask all the what if questions in the world, but again, that wasn't the Or Chaim, it was a different commentary who made the point that Moshe is more or less giving the same size crowd to Yehoshua. Okay. All right, we're going to skip the part which I put in italics. It has to do with the relationship between Hashem and the nations of the world, so we'll just leave what it is. Wanted to draw your attention to Pasuk Yud Aleph in Perek Vav. Okay, so that's the, or Pasuk Yud Beis rather, I don't know why it's in, oh no, Yud Aleph, Ubnei Korach LeMesu. So the Or Chaim does talk about Dasan and Avirim, why Dasan and Avirim are mentioned here, but it's a lengthy comment, so I took it out. But I wanted to show you the small comment about Ubnei Korach. Okay, Hodia Kasav Inyan Zekan, Lo Makom Ikar Maisa. We didn't hear that the sons of Korach didn't die in Parshas Korach. We're only told that here. So he says, why is that the case? Gam lo kasu makom mispar leviim, kisham makom odasa mesa mehem. Right? Even when accounting of the leviim, we're told about some of the people who died. Lefi mashe kasavnu, ki kan ba lehim lekba avon b'dasan avirum l'hakel me'al korach. So what the Torah is doing here in the immediate psukim beforehand is to show us how terrible dasan avirum's sin was. Zegamar Omer b'nei Korach l'meisu, hakavana shezeh yagid z'chus aviyim, shelo shitfam chavo, gederach shashitem chavam shal dasan aviram. If you think about the difference, shashitem chavam shal dasan aviram, kol batem liosam ikar machlokas. Okay? What dasan aviram did was their sin was so terrible that they even ensnared their whole family, so that when they died, their families were gone too. Korach, you know, there's a side to say that what Korach was doing was, you know, at least somewhat genuine, right? Somewhat, I don't want to say justified, but genuine. You know, I want to serve God too. Dasan Avir, they're just saying, Moshe, you're crumb bagel. We have no interest in you at all, and we think you're a terrible leader. They were saying, no, you know, maybe there's room for us to. So that's an interesting thing. Now, when it comes to Dasan and Aviram, so when he talks about them, he goes into much greater detail about how the Torah emphasizes the death of their family and the way in which they went about their challenge to Moshe. Okay, we have. Oh, maybe we have time. All right, let's do two more things. Avinu Meis Bamidbar. Okay, so this is the daughters of Safchad. Okay, Tamo Meis Bamidbar L'Shlol Shalom Meis Bamitzrayim. So the first thing that the Torah is indicating here is that when they say that he died in the wilderness, it's to indicate that he did not die in Egypt, because if he had died in Egypt, then he wouldn't have any right whatsoever to the land. Okay, that so the Zohar has this thing that what Safchad's sin was had to do, Bamidbar is like Bimidaber. Okay, it's a hint that what he did was his sin was on account of speech. Okay, the Zohar is of the view that what Slavchad's sin was that he was involved in he was punished by the snake biting. When the Pasuk says, Vayamas Amrav Yisrael, it's that one person died, and who was that person? It was Slavchad. And why? Because the Pasuk says, Vayidaber Ha'am Be'elokimu Moshe, that the Am spoke against Moshe and God, and when it says Vayamas Amrav, it means one guy. That's what the Zohar says. Okay, Amrav, Vayidaber Ha'am, Amrav is one guy who was a Rav. Like he was a leader of some kind in his community. So what they're saying is, V'amru avinu meis b'medaber, perush, ech, turn the page, Yal adas, yakshvu davarzeh, lohema roes, asherim yis Hashem aviyem, b'shvil shadiber Moshe. See what he says? They saw that their father died because he had spoken bad against Moshe. V'zeh oz la'em l'archik ma'akshavoz oven beish elohim. And that's why they're trying to say, Moshe, we have nothing against you. We our father did what he did. V'amru ra'el davar shem yis Hashem aviyem, b'shvil shadiber Moshe. He wasn't involved with the congregation of Korach. He just said, something dumb about Moshe, and that's how he died. So I just wanted to share that with you to understand where they're coming from. That when the daughters of Slavchad say Avinu Meis Bamidbar, they're recognizing that what he did was, in the scheme of things, he wasn't involved in any group. That's really what they're saying. He wasn't part of Korach. He wasn't part of the spies. He wasn't. I mean, they only mentioned Korach, but they're saying Avinu Meis Bamidbar that he's taking the interpretation of the Zohar that's what he was involved in, and he was alone in doing that, and he wasn't involved with anybody else. It was just his own little thing. And it wasn't such a big deal, but God really took it out on him. Okay,
and he was not the Mekor Sheshitzim.
According to the Zohar, correct. He was not the Mekor Sheshitzim. Okay, I wanted to share with you the last thing here. We got 4 minutes, and we'll do this. Okay. We're familiar with the Psukim, it's what we read on Rosh Chodesh. Tzavas b'nei Yisrael, tzarkel das, lam b'sidir parshas ha-korbanos, malkom zeh ha-chamino Yehoshua, v'lo malkom shetziva al-korbanos parshas emor. He asked the question, why are we given the rules of the korbanos of Rosh Chodesh, and I guess of everything else, here, specifically after Yehoshua is appointed, why isn't it done in parshas emor, when we're told about the korbanos, when we're told about the holidays? Shari mitzvah zo mukhroch atolomar, they need to know about the Karbanos from the time of the establishment of the Mishkan, and Yehoshua was appointed in the 40th year. And maybe those instructions were given then, but why is it here in the Torah? Why is it mentioned here in the Torah? It's trying to remind Yehoshua that if you want to do this, guess who has to do the Karbanos? Just because you're a leader doesn't mean you can do whatever you want. Okay, the Kohanim. It has to be, it's Karbani Lachmili, Yishai Reach Nichochi, Tishmeru, that you all have to do it. Okay, so it's to remind Yehoshua that you have a role, and your role is your role, but don't expand outside of your role. Even if Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to do that, it was a certain time and place, but in the end of the day, these instructions are given to Aaron. And maybe it's a reminder of, or at least say an indicator of the kind of things that Moshe does when Moshe tells over the book of Devarim. Remember that when Moshe gives over the book of Devarim, a lot of mitzvahs that Moshe gives over are mitzvahs that relate to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because they're most relevant to the people who are about to go into the land of Israel. And so maybe that's a similar thing that's going on over here with Yoshua, who's about to lead the people in the land, and he should not venture outside of his role as leader into thinking that maybe, oh yeah, I'm a leader, I can do whatever I want. And the answer is, no, you can't. Don't forget that you represent the Tzibur, and the Tzibur brings carbonless Tzibur, and you're not a Kohen, and you know, and so that's his explanation for why this instruction is given to us here, even though it may have been commanded way, way back. I'm sure it was commanded way, way back. But in the Torah, it's presented over here so that Yahushua could be given that reminder of who he is, and of course, who he is not.